Of course, it can be abused and misused. It can be just as dead. The speaking can be just as dead, and the sounds can be just as dead and lifeless as anything else. If it doesn't work, the trouble is not in the form or the absence of form, but in the worshipper. I once read a novel, it's never been published, so I can't refresh my mind about it. It was a story of a little community that had six or eight characters, you know, in various relationships, old men and young men and their parents and young women and so on. And the novelist, who is a friend and had had experience in a friend's meeting, described a friend's meeting. Now, novelists can take the people apart, can't they? The way John Hershey does, for instance, in his Hiroshima. He can follow the history of various people and then bring them up to the meeting, and then they're all sitting in the meeting in the quiet. And the novelist can tell the reader, who knows the background of each of these characters, what was going through the mind of that individual in the silence of this meeting. And I think, if I remember rightly, there was only one spoken message, and that a very brief one, by an elderly friend who was there. And the novelist shows how what he said, very simple words, were used, fitted into the thought pattern of each of the six or eight persons at the time. I believe that's a psychological study which is authentic in character. And although it's purely fiction, I believe it's based upon a sense of what is experienced in a successful friends meeting. Strangers, of course, have difficulty with it at first, or may. I've often talked to people who come to meeting for the first time. Their reactions are interesting. Children, mother, when will the meeting begin? You know, that sort of thing. And the answer is, the meeting begins as soon as you begin it. There's no signal like the shaking of hands. There's no introit or invocation by which tells you when it begins. What do you think of putting a meeting like this on the air? That's been tried. What would you do if you were running a studio? Obviously, most people would say, goodness, my set's must have gone dead. You know, turn around. My set's gone dead. And maybe they turn it around till they heard a fundamentalist preaching on another wavelength the same Sunday morning, and then they'd know that they know the difference, I think. In England, where they tried to put a friends meeting on the air, they usually have a clock in the room that ticks loud enough, you see, so that they can't have soft music. That's what you do during the communion service, don't you? You have soft music. Or during the collection. That you do. Not in a friend meeting. But they do have a clock that ticks loud enough. My whole preference would be, it'd be put it not on the radio, but on television. And although that's rarely been done, I think you see the advantage. In television, you can see that the meeting is there, and that there nobody is speaking, and therefore the soundtrack hasn't gone dead. You can watch the people. You can see men and women and little children sitting quite quietly, Not restless, not looking around, see what's going on, just waiting there. So I believe it's possible to transmit to the stranger public a friends meeting by television. And then, of course, the speaking is quite simple. And there's one other advantage of television, that you have a soundproof room where the announcer is. And while the meeting is going on, the announcer can say, if you'll observe, these people have gathered for worship. They're sitting in silence. This is characteristic of a friends meeting. And if anyone feels that they should speak, you will see them rise and you will hear what they say. That's the kind of introduction. So it's quite possible to, I think, to put it in on that form. I wonder if any of you remember seeing the Friendly Persuasion some years ago. There was a friends meeting there. Gary Cooper, the late Gary Cooper, was playing a principal role. And out of Hollywood, he said, before I play that role, I've got to attend a friends meeting. Well, near Hollywood, there is an old-fashioned Quaker meeting. And he went and attended it. And it was his appropriate form for an actor to expose himself to the real thing and something he was going to play. I remember an episode from that. This is very old-fashioned friends. Many of them still wearing the plain bonnets and hats of friends. And after the meeting was over, he shook hands, of course, with various people in the meeting as he was going out. And one old deaf man said to him, what is thy name? And he said, Gary Cooper. He said, what was that name? I didn't catch it. Well, this was his initiation into this kind of service. If I may mention another well-known person, it's E.B. White of the New Yorker. In one of his books, he wrote this. In radio, it is understood that whatever else happens, there must never be a silence. This hard condition is most noticeably in the aerial forums in which the performers are expected to offer an immediate opinion on any subject. Someone must always be speaking, either the ringleader or one of the experts. The rule seems to be make sense if you can, but if you can't make sense, say something anyway. If you listen to one of the nervous rough and tumble, it is plain that a large part of the effort goes simply into preventing a lull in the conversation. The Quakers take a more sensible view of silence. They accorded equal recognition with sound. We doubt whether radio will ever amount to a damn as long as it's haunted by the fear of nobody speaking. Well, that's another angle on this kind of problem. I put on the board the name of an essay by Charles Lamb, and I'll read you the first words in that essay. Reader, wouldst thou know what true peace and quiet mean? Wouldst thou find a refuge from the noises and clamors of the multitudes? Wouldst thou enjoy at once solitude and society? Wouldst thou possess the depth of thy own spirit in stillness, without being shut out from the consoling faces of thy species? Wouldst thou be alone and yet accompanied, solitary yet not desolate, singular yet not without some to keep thee in countenance, a unit in aggregate, a simple in composite, come with me into a Quaker's meeting. He says some interesting things. He talks about the hermits in Egypt. And I should add, by the way, that the use of silence in worship, while so rare in Western Christendom, is not at all rare in the Orient, as you know. The Oriental religions understand something of the same thing. And talking, Lamb, in his same essay, talking about these hermits in the desert, he says that they come together in shoals to enjoy one another's want of conversation. Lack of conversation. Well, that's a form of enjoyment, according to that. Well, this is the kind of worship that the Friends had from the beginning. Alongside, I think, of a large meeting of non-Friends in visitors, strangers. In London, you may remember, they got a couple of very big halls. And these were called threshing meetings. And there, one of the leading speakers among the Friends would go and talk at great length with very little silence, I think, and then be followed by another. But when they met as Friends in what they called retired meetings, they had this type of worship. And that is the kind that has come down. Fred, we have some absentees today, and I'll ask you to answer the roll call. Darnell, I see. Delolio is absent. Cook? Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, Delolio is absent, is he not? Cook? Yeah. Helms? Hogenauer? Northrup? Burrishell? Richardson, Sipperlin, yeah. Schumann, Smullock, Franklin, Thibault, Godfrey, Fry is absent, I thought. Thank you.